Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, the Yes to Life show host, and also founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, supporting people with cancer and exploring the many benefits of integrative medicine. I'm very excited about today's show as it contains breaking news of an important step forward in establishing a cheap, safe intervention for most people with cancer that shows marked benefit to survival. My guests are two members of the research team from Cardiff University behind this news, Professor Peter Elwood and Dr. Gareth Morgan, and I'm talking to both of them over the internet. Hello, Peter and Gareth, a real pleasure to be able to talk to you both today.
I hope you'll say that at the end of the interview. It doesn't count for much at this end.
Excellent. Look, I understand it's completely in order to start out today by congratulating you on your chart-topping success.
That's very kind, Robin. You're referring to our paper that was published in eCancer, which is an online cancer journal freely available in the public domain. And yes, the metrics from that are very impressive. We're streaming at a very high research output compared with other research products that have been published. So those congratulations are very well received, and we're naturally very proud of the paper.
Yeah.
May I just put that into context? Our very first paper was a report of the first randomized controlled trial of aspirin mm-hmm. and vascular mortality. And that was published in 1974.
Okay.
And at the end of the century, at the turn of the century, the BMJ listed the 50 most important papers that have been published in the BMJ, and our aspirin trial was in that 50.
Wow.
So it's just remarkable to get an accolade like that at the beginning of a series of 50 years, almost 50 years of research, and then to get this recent accolade from eCancer.
Yeah.
And it really encourages us that we're onto a good topic.
I think
never mind what we feel about our personal role in it.
Yeah.
It is evidently a very good topic.
Excellent. Yeah, it's very impressive. And Gareth, you didn't mention it modestly, but actually you told me yesterday you're in the top 1% out of 20 million, correct?
Yes.
That's the kind of metrics that are on the eCancer website. And it'll probably have been updated now because it's a continuous scan of research outputs that brings together measures in terms of media coverage and tweets and all of that. But what is clear, and just to build on what Peter said, is that the paper we've published on aspirin and cancer treatment has really had wide interest.
Yes.
And this conversation today is really helpful just to, as a second stage, if you like, of taking that message forward.
Yeah. Okay, so extremely gratifying. So just to be clear, you published a paper. It's giving the results of a systematic literature search that aims to test the hypothesis that aspirin taking is associated with an increase in the survival of patients with cancer. So particularly in your case, Peter, I think you've already alluded to this. You've been looking at this matter for more than the last couple of weeks. You've really been at it quite a while, haven't you?
Yes. How we took up the topic of aspirin doesn't matter now. But within the confusion about aspirin and vascular disease, and now the confusion about aspirin and cancer, the one area that we felt was worth investigating in the greatest detail was the treatment. It is prevention of vascular disease mm-hmm. and prevention of cancer that is such a difficult topic. It's causing a lot of confusion with trials going one way and studies going another way. But we saw in all that confusion that there were two areas, I needn't mention the other, but this area, the treatment of cancer seemed to be coming out repeatedly, not entirely, but repeatedly there were successful studies, mostly observational, but just one or two hints in the randomized trials that this is a real effect. So we've been working on that, just that, the treatment of cancer for the last roughly 10 years.
Right. But your overall involvement with aspirin is even longer than that, though, I believe.
50 years.
So I think you could be said to be the man who knows about aspirin and cancer. So fantastic. Well, look, it's very important what you're saying, because, yes, it's not prevention. This is about treatment, which is, of course, the shortcomings of cancer treatment are legendary, that we're not very successful at doing it. So everything we can find out that's going to improve people's chances is desperately important. So when I was young, aspirin was the go-to. It was always at hand in the medicine cupboard for all those aches and pains. And that's not quite so true now, as it does have some side effects which have been highlighted. And also, of course, there's other types of pain medication being developed. But it's kind of synonymous with painkiller, the word aspirin, in the way that Hoover means vacuum cleaner. But what exactly is aspirin?
I think it's worth mentioning anytime we talk about it, that it is originally of plant origin. Mm-hmm. And others have commented that in recent years, there's more and more interest in cancer research on plant chemicals, plant extracts. Mm-hmm. The originalist story has been so told so often, it must be true, that Hippocrates recommended a brew of willow leaves. But then around the turn, about 50 years ago, the effects of aspirin on platelets became of intense interest, because at the same time, platelets were being shown to be the key factor in myocardial infarction. The platelets were clumping together, sticking together and forming a clot which blocked a coronary vessel. And so the pharmacologists took a great interest in chemicals that might affect platelets. And two in particular, Harvey Weiss in America and John O'Brien in Portsmouth, focused on aspirin and showed that very small doses of aspirin had a prolonged effect on platelet function. But then at the same time, in 1968, a biochemist, Gasek, started looking at platelets in animals, and he found that platelets were involved in the metastatic spread of cancer. So the beneficial effect of aspirin in cancer actually goes back to 1968, where an effect on metastatic spread was found by doses of aspirin. Mm-hmm. But that lay... And if I may just slip in a little anecdote here. Okay. I visited a dear old man in one of the agricultural research units who was said to be the world authority on salicylates. And he said to me, I told him about the trial we were setting up on aspirin and myocardial infarction. And he said to me, skip heart disease, go for cancer.
Wow.
In plants... Wow. Salicylic acid has numerous effects, and they have effects on cancer and on DNA, mismatched DNA. He said, go for cancer. And I had to say to that dear old man, I had to say, well, look, we have resources to do a study on vascular disease. We would need 10 times those resources if we were going to look at cancer.
Yes.
We couldn't do it. And of course, how I wish we had done it.
Yeah, well, he obviously knew a thing or two. Interesting. So it's been there as a suggestion for a long time that it could be used. And that suggestion actually hangs over lots of other drugs that have been developed for other purposes, that they could be repurposed for use in cancer. And it's quite controversial at the moment. Some people are doing it, using it. Plenty of people are dismissing it as being... just, you know, a waste of time. And, of course, our latest, most cunning drugs are the ones to focus in on. Is aspirin being used in any way in cancer treatment now? Is it already in use?
That's an interesting question, Robin, because there is a form of blood cancers called the myoproliferative neoplasms,
okay,
which understandably are abbreviated to MPNs. And some patients with these MPNs may be prescribed low-dose aspirin to help reduce the risk of clots. Right. And as Peter Elwood was referring to, the history of aspirin, the major trials in the 1970s of aspirin and heart disease mediated by the clots, of which aspirin can be beneficial. So certainly aspirin is finding use in those cancers, mm-hmm. albeit prescribed. And one example of that is a particular blood cancer called polycythemia vera, which is one of the MPN cancers. And aspirin could be prescribed for that to reduce a blood clot. So at the moment, it's got a very restricted use in some cancers. And you would say it's as an adjuvant treatment in terms of some of the clotting effects rather than acting on the underlying cancer process itself.
Right. Yeah, that's clear. They're obviously just thinking of its use in relation to clotting and using it entirely for that. But they may be inadvertently helping in another way they don't realise. The information on metformin and cancer has really come out of comparing people with cancer and diabetes with people with cancer and not diabetes, and actually seeing that the people who are taking the metformin were actually doing rather better. You know, it's completely accidental. They weren't doing it intentionally, but retrospectively, you can look back and see that actually for people to have metformin while they've got cancer did have an advantage. So I assume this is a bit of what you've been up to, is looking back at what's happened. And so maybe you want to tell me a little bit about your study, your research, what you've actually been looking into. Have you looked into lots of different kinds of cancer, for instance?
Yes. Now, can I just interrupt a little?
Sure.
Our first trial of aspirin and vascular mortality was picked up by Sir Richard Peto and Richard Dahl. Mm-hmm. And they developed the overview. And the very first systematic overview and meta-analysis was done on six trials of aspirin, two of which we had completed and four other trials. And the whole development in that area of research started with aspirin and six trials, none of which showed a significant benefit, but together showed overwhelming benefit. So the development of systematic reviews really followed on Archie Cochrane's plea that in reviewing the evidence, what had been happening was that researchers and clinicians were finding one or two papers which suited their thinking and gave them a basis for a bit of research. And that selection of background information is really, can be totally misleading and can be dishonest. So Archie Cochrane and Richard Peto put forward the plans for a systematic review where the rules are tight and putting together in a meta-analysis is according to certain statistical rules. We started in 1916 with a publication where we had done a systematic literature review. We had found about 43 papers in which some cancer patients were taking aspirin, and we looked at the mortality in the cancer patients who happened to be on aspirin and those who were not. And we find a highly significant benefit, the aspirin being associated with a reduction in mortality, both cancer mortality and all-cause mortality.
Right.
We followed that 2 years later with another systematic review. And then 3 years after that, we published the paper we're talking about. We got experts in literature searching, and they did a very extensive and repeated literature search, and they identified about 3,000 papers which mentioned aspirin and when it was in cancer. So we selected the ones which suited our hypothesis that aspirin reduced mortality or increased survival. And we got 118 papers. We extracted the data from those and did a very careful statistical analysis and a meta-analysis. We also looked very, very carefully at publication bias, which is a very important limitation in this kind of work, because papers that show an effect tend to be published, while those studies which don't show an effect tend to end up in the waste paper basket.
Right.
We did exacting analyses on these 118 papers. They covered, there were 34 papers dealt with unusual cancers.
Okay.
The common cancer for study is colon cancer, because there's a lot of it around.
Yes.
But we included every paper which mentioned aspirin in cancer patients, mentioned aspirin taking and gave evidence on mortality, and also some of them gave evidence on the duration of the additional survival in patients on aspirin. And that was the basis of the paper, a summary of three intensive literature searching and meta-analyses, then all put together in this most recent paper and submitted and accepted by eCancer.
Very interesting. So, you know, these kind of criteria you're talking about are all important, because you can, to a large extent, get the answer you want looking back on and being selective. And the systematic review is obviously a step forward in that the only criteria they were using for eligibility was the quality of the trial itself. So if a trial wasn't good enough, it was excluded, but otherwise they were all included. And it's a much better chance of getting a more realistic result from that. Obviously, you've been at great pains with your analysis to try and get to the facts beyond all the what's been reported, and to remove any bias or you might feel is there. So we have to do the best we can with these things, and it's all a kind of art. It's a dark art rather than the science, I think, this statistical analysis. But it's incredibly important, because, of course, we've got this information. We must be able to find out things from it. And when the subject is so important, we must do our very best to see what we can find out that's a reliable piece of information. And you've clearly had a darn good go at that, and you're getting the feedback for that in terms of the interest in your study, clearly.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
And just really to add to that, which is Peter alluded to it. So our first study goes back to 2016, another study in 2018, and this recent study now. One of the great strengths of science is replication. So we did the very first paper back in 5 years ago when it was published, which showed that suggestive benefit. We needed to look at that again.
Right.
So we did look at that again a second time. We're always looking for error. We're always looking for chance finding. So the second paper actually replicated the first. And then this third paper, which was quite large, we're talking about something like 250,000 cancer patients taking aspirin. Right. So it's quite a large study.
Yeah.
And again, the replication is there, which does provide robustness to the findings. So it's not just the methodology. Peter mentioned the very exacting literature research that we did and the very detailed statistics and looking for errors and checking that. We also had a very strong team, and I pay tribute to the team that we had, drawn from a wide range of different expertise, and they all fed into it. We had committee meetings to discuss things, massive exchanges of emails, always looking for those chance findings. So this was put under massive scrutiny. And actually the peer review on this as well, very, very detailed. It went to several reviewers. Critical findings were coming back to us to respond to. Took a long time, which we welcomed. We welcomed that critique. So we're naturally very pleased with the robustness of this, but it's got quite a background and quite a strong team that helped put it together.
Yeah, well, fantastic. Well,
now, can I?
Sure.
Can I dwell a little on another aspect? Okay, one aspect is the drug effective? Does it reduce mortality? Does it reduce spread? But the other is it safe?
Yeah.
I think if you open up the web, you'll find lots of remarks that are unsupported by any evidence. And some of them are just fake news, that aspirin is a dangerous drug, it causes death. No, no. Deaths do occur in people taking aspirin, but they occur in the general community. The gastrointestinal bleeding, which is the most common side effect associated with aspirin, that occurs in about 1 in 1,000 people per year in the general community, nothing to do with aspirin. So when a patient on aspirin dies from a bleed, then immediately finger pointing starts. But that could be a spontaneous fatal bleed.
Yeah.
Now, we did about 10 years work on, again, a systematic review and a meta-analysis on bleeding.
Right.
And we decided that we accept the general figure that aspirin increases gastrointestinal bleeding by 50%. Yes, we accept that, and it shows in all the data that we have ever analyzed, right, something like that, around 50% increase. Mm. Now, if you think about it, that figure of 50% means that only 1 in 3 of every bleed that occurs in a person taking aspirin, only 1 in 3 is due to the aspirin. The other 2 are probably spontaneous bleeds.
Mm.
So anyway, we focused on 11 large randomized control trials in which fatal bleeding had been mentioned.
Right.
And we did a very detailed analysis on bleeding and mortality. We did confirm that there's a 50% increase in total bleeding, total gastrointestinal bleeding in those on aspirin. But when we looked at fatal bleeding, I have to confess that we were a bit taken aback, because we found that the fatal bleeds only occurred with a risk ratio of 0.45. In other words, there was a reduction in fatal bleeds in people on aspirin. That threw us.
Yeah,
we felt, can this be true?
Yeah.
And the only explanation that makes sense with us, and it's been repeated by Kubach in the USA and by Blatt in the USA and by a few other single trials, where they have suggested that if a person has a gastrointestinal ulcer or an infection of the stomach, and you give aspirin, you're likely to precipitate a bleed. The bleed may well occur on aspirin, but it will occur at an earlier stage in the development of that ulcer or the development of that infection. And at an earlier stage, treatment is more effective and death is less likely. So we think that what is happening is that in people who go on aspirin, some of them have got gastrointestinal pathology. In the normal event of life, that would bleed eventually in some of those. But if you give aspirin, it potentiates the risk of a bleed. They bleed at an earlier stage, and the risk of a death is actually decreased.
Wow.
Now, in our paper, we quote the background to this, and about 6 other papers have shown this. And the important one is Kubach, who published on behalf of one of the learned societies and acknowledged that there was no increase in fatal bleeding in people on aspirin. There is an increase in total bleeding, but not in fatal bleeding. Mm. And Blatt the same, acknowledged the same.
Well, that's a very important distinction in that case, isn't it? Mm. Okay, interesting. Thank you for that. I just want to come back a bit to the fact that your study has included all these different cancers. So is there evidence to show that aspirin is helpful right across the board with cancer, or are there areas in which it's not shown to do anything at all?
We're not experts on mechanisms, but we do have an expert on the team.
Right.
And we put quite a lot into our recent papers on the mechanisms. I think it's fair to say that the mechanisms, particularly things like DNA mismatch repair, something like the enhancement of apoptosis of abnormal cells. Those protective mechanisms are enhanced by aspirin, and the literature on that goes a way back. So that is across many cancers.
Right.
We have 18 different cancers in our study, and I think it's fair to say the mechanisms are across those 18, and probably across perhaps all cancers, and some of them people involved in mechanisms of action of aspirin should really look and see, are there any exceptions?
Yeah.
But we're not experts on that. But certainly in the 18, there does seem to be an action of the aspirin on the mechanisms across these. And actions on DNA are basic to this whole area of work.
Mm. So does this mean then that includes blood cancers just the same as solid cancers?
That's a very, very sharp question. We have one report in our meta-analysis, and I wouldn't like to place any confidence on a single paper.
No.
Blood cancers have been accepted by some writers. I just don't know. I don't think we can comment on that.
No. All right. Well, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because so many things you find, this works, but it works with solid tumours. You know, you can exclude lymph cancers and blood cancers. Also, you get a lot of the effects of various approaches can be useless with something like brain cancers because of the blood-brain barrier. Is aspirin effective with brain cancers?
Again, we have one, glioma, mm-hmm. Where it's included. We can't answer that.
I think that what that could reveal is the need for further research.
Mm-hmm.
There is certainly a suggestion from the 18 cancers combined that it will naturally exclude a large number of other cancers. Cancer is a very broad family. There's, I think, well in excess of 100 different types of cancers, and many of those have different subtypes themselves. So simply there needs to be more research on certain aspects of this. We've included the available literature, but that available literature is naturally limited as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the calls that we're making for is additional research, especially in the rarer cancers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say that rarer cancers often have poorer outcomes. There's an inequality of survival sometimes.
Absolutely.
Late diagnosis, treatment options fewer. So that's certainly an opportunity for further work there.
Mm-hmm. In a way, it's kind of frustrating that you're the amount of money for research into something like this is probably much harder to get than it is for something which is looking to target one specific gene mutation, which will be of help
yes.
to a very few patients somewhere. This has the potential
yes.
to help, millions of different kinds of patients, and it could be very universal in the way it helps. And so actually, if you wanted to get a quick win, this is the place to put your money.
I think there's going to be a huge increase in papers on mechanisms of aspirin. I think our paper has put forward the hypothesis that it's beneficial in most, if not all. And we slipped in that word as a challenge to the experts on mechanisms. Come on, put out the research on this.
Yeah.
We're not the experts on that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So,
Sorry, can I come back? I'm so rude interrupting.
Go on.
But I think again, we should say, remember, it is safe. It is a very remarkably safe drug. And compared to the other anti-cancer drugs, it is remarkably safe. So even if it was given to some cancer, which was later shown not to respond to aspirin, well, okay, we made a mistake. What? No harm done.
Yeah.
Sorry interrupting like that.
Don't worry. It's important you say these things. So do we know enough about the effect of cancer to recommend changes in the way it's used in different cancers at all? Is it like, well, low dose aspirin, the same for everybody? Or would a more aggressive cancer have more aspirin? Or, you know, is there any correlation between protocol and, you know, the condition of the patient?
Can I duck that question and say that the area where we feel it would be of enormous benefit is in the poorer countries, where cancer is detected late, where the facilities for treatment are few and far between. So rather than say, well, are there certain cancers in this country, one of our mission statements is, let's try and get this into developing countries. So I leave the more difficult question to you, Gareth.
What I would add to that is, I think it's appropriate to say, and this is already in the public domain, because when our paper was published 2 weeks ago, there was considerable media interest, and we were quite careful with some of the messaging that went out there, given that it was going to be out into the public domain. So it's fair to say that the evidence on the efficacy and safety of low-dose aspirin justifies it now being considered as a supplementary treatment in a wide range of cancers in adult patients. What we would say is that should be something raised with the healthcare team treating that patient. There could be lots of options with that. That could include enrolling patients into trials. Mm-hmm. That could include new trials being set up, more observational studies. But certainly what we've shown is there's a huge appetite for this information out there in the public domain. Yeah. Our paper's shown that. The media coverage has shown that. And we almost want to see those discussions happening because that will increase the knowledge base. It may increase more trials, more participation in trials. We just want to see this being taken forward now in terms of some action.
Yeah. Great.
So do you have any sense of the sort of comparative level of interest between the public and medicine in general?
Certainly the metrics we're seeing from our paper, where it's monitored, there was a high number of social media posts from members of the public. Mm-hmm. I think the figure I've got is 78%.
Right.
So it's clearly getting out there. It obviously got out there in the first wave through a press statement into the media. Peter and I had a number of interviews with some of the media companies as well. But it's this secondary information now. We live in the digital world. Social media, Facebooks, tweets, WhatsApp, Instagram, all of those things.
Yeah.
So it's probably getting out there now. I think what we're keen to see is, rather than that being uncontrolled, because it almost could take on its own life, it could become modified the message as it goes through different media forms. Mm-hmm. I think what we would be keen to see is some kind of charity-led patient information leaflet, which summarizes the evidence as a go-to place that people can access and literally see the basis of the facts. Here are the facts. We're not making any firm recommendations about anything. Right. I think it's absolutely important to stress that aspirin is not a possible alternative to any other treatment in cancer patients. But what we are saying is we want to see the awareness amongst all kinds of stakeholders, primarily cancer patients, but family members, carers, healthcare professionals, charities, researchers. We just need to see this message get out there and see what happens then in terms of further research, further studies, further evidence.
Mm, good. Yeah. Well, I like your thinking, as much how we think, is that if we sit back and wait for the establishment of, you know, how these things work their way through the system, usually new ideas seem to me to, they need a generation to die off before they're accepted.
Yes.
And that's, we haven't got the luxury of that time. People want answers now. The rate at which cancer's accelerating is way beyond that. And so actually, if we get a bit of a public push, you know, in order to get change, well, all well and good as far as I'm concerned. So, very good. So is anybody else doing research on aspirin? Or are you going this alone?
There is the Aspirin Foundation. After the very first trial of ours was published in 1974, very fine businessman and veterinarian set up an aspirin foundation. And that has grown in strength and now attracts some of the top people in aspirin research. It's led by somebody, Pippa Hutchison, and it's on the web. The International Aspirin Foundation is well worth looking at. I was chairman of that for a short time. I agreed to do it for 1 year because I said I want to be able to do my own thing uninhibited by people demanding more work on mechanisms. I deal in the real world and I want to do clinical studies and meta-analyses and so on of clinical data. Mechanisms, yes, we need each other, but it's not my expertise. But there is an enormous amount of work, but I would say most of it is on mechanisms. And there's the difficulty in getting funding for a drug that makes no profit. But I have to say that Bayer, who support the International Aspirin Foundation, they have been very supportive of work on aspirin. But most of the work, I think, is it's mostly on mechanisms. We've got to mention a recent trial, Aspirin. Do you know about the Aspirin trial? Well, Aspirin was set up by an Irishman in Australia, John O'Neill, and it's a very, very fine study. He selected elderly, healthy people, healthy people over 70, and he put 10,000, he randomized 10,000 to aspirin and 10,000 to a placebo. Now, the background literature shows that if people start taking aspirin, there's a delay of 5 to 10 years before a clinical effect of the aspirin becomes apparent. They did their follow-up at 4.7 years, and they reported no benefit from aspirin on cancer. And that's bad enough. But unfortunately, there was a very small increase in cancer in those on aspirin. And this has been interpreted, therefore, as some kind of reversal of the effect of aspirin in elderly people. There is no support for that hypothesis, but unfortunately, it's in one of their papers that aspirin may reverse its effect in the elderly. And caution should be used in recommending aspirin for elderly people. I have written twice to this dear old man, John O'Neill, who headed the research team. I've written to him twice, challenging that on the basis of a short follow-up and on the basis of the fact that they monitored the taking of aspirin in their study, in their trial, and it fell off very badly, and 40% of people allotted to aspirin stopped taking the aspirin before the end of the trial.
That's a lot.
So I think that trial is deeply flawed. And secondly, it is not treatment, it is prevention. So its relevance to our work on treatment is very indirect. And the limitations in the trial, I think, but you will find that if you talk to any clinician or anyone in research, they'll say, no, no, aspirin was finished by the Aspirin trial. Nonsense. It was a trial of treatment. It went on too short and the treatment was stopped by 40% of the people in the trial.
It's very hard to get rid of these kind of results once they've got out there, isn't it?
That's right.
However bogus they are.
That's right.
Look, a very interesting distinction you made there between this research into mechanisms and clinical research, because I'm aware of the fact that a massive amount of research is into things that are actually not that interesting to the public. The public, yes, who's got cancer, of course, they're interested in living longer, living better. And if it doesn't answer one of those things, well, what's it about? Why? I mean, okay, mechanisms are all very interesting and they could be useful. Okay, we found out this thing works. Well, let's find out why now. It's almost an afterthought.
And is it safe?
Is it safe?
Yeah, is it safe?
That's important. Yeah. But, you know, it's a kind of afterthought which will maybe have some useful spin-off to find out how it works. Yes. But it's not the first thing. It's does it work is much more important to the public. So I'm glad you made the distinction. So, look, we're coming to the end in terms of time. I just ask you to answer this one quickly if you can. So you won't ever hear a news report on a new development in cancer treatment that doesn't end with the caveat that more research is needed. You know,
yeah,
that's like you have to say that. It's the politically correct thing to say. But the inference to listeners with cancer desperate for answers right now is, well, don't think for a moment this has got anything to do with you. In the firmament of drugs, aspirin is probably the best known drug of all time with the public, and I can just pop down to Boots and get myself some. So two questions about that. What's the likelihood in your mind that aspirin will be doled out in the cancer wards anytime soon? And if the answer to that question is what I suspect, how do you think people with cancer should respond to your findings?
You've asked two very relevant questions there, Robin, and I'd probably want to take the second of those first because it'll have a bearing on your initial question. Probably the way forward now is to take a centre ground message on this. There is debate, there is ongoing research, there are counter views on all of this, and I think that the correct thing to do is to come up with a centre ground message that everybody will agree on. Right. This is already in the public domain. So let's take that centre ground. Let's avoid controversy and let's certainly avoid cancer patients being in the crossfire between expert A and expert B. So we want to safeguard that position.
Yeah.
So really what we're looking at is a patient information leaflet that's charity-led because charities obviously have reached out to cancer patients. And there would probably be several intentions for a cancer leaflet. Firstly, around general awareness raising about low-dose aspirin and cancer treatment. Now, our paper's in the public domain. It's about 70 pages long. I'm not sure that many cancer patients will want to go there and read all of that. We need a nice summary that can raise that general awareness, not just for cancer patients, but for a whole range of stakeholders. I think the second intention then would be to stimulate discussion between cancer patients and healthcare professionals. You can't even consider taking an aspirin if you don't discuss it. Right. We need to have those discussions ongoing. You're right in what you're saying. People can pop down to Boots. That probably wouldn't be the best thing because how can we then monitor the effect of aspirin if we don't even know that people are doing it? So we don't want any off-radar use of aspirin. It needs to be something that we can record and measure. So thirdly, a leaflet would stimulate cancer patients being recruited into trials. There are trials ongoing at the minute, and generally speaking, trials are considered the gold standard. We would have no argument with that. The problem with trials is they only cover a certain small number of cancers, not all cancers, and will take many years to report, which raises the question what we do in the interim, hence the patient information leaflet. And the other thing about trials is new trials being set up as well in a broader range of cancers and looking at different patient groups as well. And then finally, the intention of a patient information leaflet would be to stimulate other forms of research. So we looked at observational studies. Observational studies where you don't intervene, you literally follow up or look back at what's happened. It is a natural experiment. It's just what it is and you make the measurement. Cancer patients who are reading this paper, or the patient information leaflet, who talk to their healthcare professional about the possibility of aspirin, which may include trials or new trials, or possibly as a supplementary additional treatment to be considered. The question then is, when does aspirin become relevant? But that's a discussion with the healthcare team that they're working with. That also could be part of the additional research. And I absolutely take Peter Elwood's point on this intensely, which is, it's not just the effectiveness, but it's also the safety. So that would give us good safety information as well.
Right.
So we need all of those things to happen, but that can only happen if there's a centre ground message that's credible focused and people can access.
Excellent. Well, look, I'm delighted to say that we're collaborating with you in getting that information out. And I'm going to give full details about this patient information leaflet at the end of the show so people can access this. So fantastic step, I think, for the public in terms of equipping them with something which could genuinely help them. So I think we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. It's been a really fascinating talk. Thank you so much. I'd also like to say a small word of appreciation for your clear and massive dedication to the cause of actually helping people with cancer rather than just doing some nice research. Also, over and above all the other conflicting agendas that are often attached to research, such as like we can make a shed load of money out of this. So I've got to say that you're very impressive in that way, in the way you're clearly dedicated to helping people with cancer. And we need more of this kind of research. The best science being put to the best use. Really, really fantastic. So thanks for telling us all about it today.
Thank you. That was delightful. I find that research is not only intellectually satisfying, but it gives enormous pleasure. And this has been a particularly pleasant Zoom. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, great.
And if I could echo that, Robin, it's been a pleasure to have this interview today, a pleasure to have our correspondence, and a pleasure in terms of some of the future collaboration that you outlined earlier.
Thank you.
God bless.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Cheers, Peter. Bye-bye.
To me, it's brilliant that researchers are now refusing to have important but unprofitable results shoved into the long grass by a healthcare system completely in the thrall of expensive new solutions, and are publishing direct to the public who are so desperate for exactly this: cheap, effective, safe solutions. I'm delighted to say we've added the leaflet on aspirin and cancer, as discussed in the interview, to our resources, and you'll find a link to it with the show details on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk and click the link to the Yes to Life show that's on the homepage. Thanks for listening today. I hope you'll want to listen to the Yes to Life show again at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.